Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Parenting Aces radio show on Blog Talk Radio's UR Tennis Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, shivering in Atlanta today after playing a really blustery tennis match this morning. I survived. I won. Thankfully, it was the ugliest tennis ever, but, you know, a win's a win. So I'll take it. But I am so excited about our show today. I've got a whole panel of guests to share their thoughts with us on 10 and under tennis and the pros and cons of what's happening with our youngest players in our sport. And on the line with me today, we will have Lawrence Roddick, Trey Foster, and Lisa Johnston. I'm expecting a couple other folks to call in at some point during the show, too, so I'm going to keep a close eye on my phone lines, and as callers come in, we will bring them on the call as well. As always, our call-in number is 714-583-6853. Again, 714-583-6853. I know there's going to be some very provocative conversation going on today, and I really do encourage those of you listening, especially those who have players who are coming under the 10 and under age group, to call in and share your experiences, the pros and the cons. We want to hear from you. Before I bring our guests on the line, though, I want to just go to a quick commercial, make sure we can pay our bills this month for Parenting Aces radio show. So we'll be back in just a minute with our guest today. Hang tight.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
Welcome back to the Parenting Aces radio show. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and we've got a great discussion today for you on 10 and under tennis. I would like to welcome first on the air Lisa Johnston. Lisa joins us from South Carolina. Lisa, are you there?
I am here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. And I'm going to just bring you guys on one at a time and let you do just a down and dirty intro of your experience and what you're currently doing with the 10 and under tennis. So if you want to give our listeners just a quick introduction.
Sure. My perspective is probably far from the opposite end of your other guest. I do teach tennis in a Columbia area in South Carolina. Most of my students are never-evers. Most of their parents have never played. They are just brand spanking new to the sport, and I do use a lot of the new formats, the new equipment that has come under some scrutiny recently. But I do use it every day in what I do for these brand-new players, and I do find it very effective, although I know it's sometimes not the best for all. For my players, it tends to be exactly what they need.
Awesome. And next I want to bring on the line Trey Foster. Trey is a parent based in Texas. And Trey, if you want to just give us a quick down and dirty intro for yourself.
Sure. I've got a 10-year-old son who we were right in that borderline of getting into the system last year, and as well as I'm a tennis coach, so I work with lots of kids of all levels. So I've got a perspective from traveling around for a year now, getting my own son involved in this, as well as getting new kids from our club, some of which had never played before and other ones that were in the system, and then just knowing multiple players from the area and coaches. And so my experience is kind of a broad version. I see the pluses and minuses of the system, and hope to share that with everyone and appreciate the opportunity to come on here. So thank you, Lisa, for having me.
Glad to have you, Trey. And Lawrence, most of our listeners have heard you on the show before, but go ahead and introduce yourself too and talk about where you're coming from with all this.
Thanks for doing the show on this, Lisa. I know you were a little hesitant to get involved in the 10 and under discussion, but from my perspective, I think this is the most important issue in United States tennis at this point, not only for higher levels, but especially for collegiate levels that everyone likes to discuss and is very important, and all the players below that. Just a quick background on what I'm doing for 10 and unders is I direct a tennis foundation. I've been doing it for 6 or 7 years. We focus on kids ages 5 to 10, and that has been our focus since its inception, just because we believe as a family that that's where the emphasis should be on tennis development. And my son is 10 now. Unfortunately, he kind of got caught up in the 10 and under mandate in Texas. And so I've been, I have a perspective not only through my son, but also through about, 20 or 30 other 10 and under kids that are participating in tournaments and are going to participate in these tournaments.
Gotcha. And Lawrence, since you mentioned the 10 and under mandate in Texas, why don't you give us kind of an overview of what Texas has adopted for the 10 and under?
I'll keep it as simple as possible, and there's a lot of nuances once you get into it. Basically, if you're 10 years old, you have to play 10 and under tournaments with red, orange, or green balls, whatever level you're at. Now, there's going to be people that say that that's not true. You can get participation credits. And the way it stands now, if you do not win 8 tournaments between orange and green ball, you will have to participate in 20 tournaments to get to play yellow ball 12 and under tennis in Texas. That's the short version of it.
And once the kids hit the 12s, they can, all the tournaments are full court yellow ball in the 12s?
Yes.
Once
you hit 11 or meet the 8 win or 20 participation requirement, then you can play 12 and under tennis, or if you're 11 years old.
But if you are 10 or under, you are not allowed to play full court yellow ball tennis until you meet that threshold. Is that correct?
Yeah, whatever threshold you meet, that is correct.
Okay. So what I find interesting, and you guys can jump in with this, is when 10 and under, red, orange, green was first introduced, the USTA, when people would complain about it, would say, well, it's not really a big deal if you feel like your child's ready for full court yellow ball tennis, just let them play up in the 12s. And so that kind of appeased people. They weren't thrilled, but at least they had an alternative to the red, orange, green balls and short courts if they wanted that. However, what's starting to happen, and we're seeing this in Georgia, not throughout the southern section, and Lisa Johnston, maybe you can speak to what's going on in South Carolina, but in Georgia, even in the 12s, they are playing green dot balls with the local tournaments. So even if you play up, you're still not playing full court with yellow balls. And I know other sections are adopting variations of that. So USTA's kind of stance on things has shifted as this red-orange-green initiative has developed. And that's where I think we're getting some pushback from families that are seeing their players develop to a point where they're ready for full-court yellow ball tennis but don't really have a place to play it. Is that correct? And Trey, maybe you can talk to that.
Sure. I think one of the questions that I keep asking is how do you define skill versus age or size? And this system is solely based on age and size. It is not based on skill whatsoever. And so they're saying, yeah, well, you can win four. Well, one of my questions is always, how many kids, if you're playing your competitive peers, win four tournaments in 10 months? That's rare that happens, even for the best kids. So as of last year, only as of February, only 14 kids had won four tournaments in the green dot ball and moved up to regular ball. That wasn't even including the orange and getting those kids transitioned in. So I think you're really cutting the flow of the kids off that are moving in there. And to me, it's just really difficult to put in these mandates without having an understanding using the coach and the parents' perspective in there.
Mm-hmm. And Lisa, what are you finding in South Carolina? Because I know, this is the age group you work primarily with. What are you finding with your kids in terms of the development and being ready to move on?
Well, as I said, most of my students and my interactions and experience have been with extreme beginner, never evers, just coming into the game. And I would say a very small percentage of those kids are affected by this issue, just from the standpoint of, the natural athletes and the more gifted players is just a smaller number. But whether the number is big or small, the problem is the same. There's always going to be some kids that just don't fit into the situation that maybe fits a majority of the players. And that's always a problem for the parent and the coach and the player to try to find the right spot that doesn't detract from their enjoyment of the game and their improvement and their progress. Very, very difficult.
My
yellow ball transition, that's probably the biggest, the thorniest issue that we have now.
Right. And so have you specifically had kids that said, I'm developing, I'm ready to kind of take my tennis to the next level, what do I do?
I have had kids and parents, we all kind of get our heads together and it's obvious, most of these players, it's quite obvious, they just kind of stand out, like there is really, this one's just not fitting in the mold and we need to find a solution here. But as your other guests will agree, I'm sure that there's not a lot of solutions. I think we're just trying to do it, on a piecemeal basis, and like Texas has done, come up with some things that maybe work for them, and hopefully, we can find a solution that works a little bit more across the board.
Gotcha. All right, we've got another caller on there. Let me just check in and see who this is. Caller from area code 517908. Are you there?
Lisa,
yes.
Is that you?
It is me.
Okay. Well, I was listening for a while. This is Tom Walker in Lansing, Michigan.
Hey, Tom. Welcome on the show. Glad to have you.
Well, one of the questions we've been following this. We have a situation that's brewing in the Midwest, and the Midwest is starting to look at these mandates, and a lot of pressure coming from national onto our section from everything we can glean. And our coaches are against the mandates, although they find the developmental track in terms of using the balls as advantageous. I really want to ask Lawrence, everything we're getting up here is painting Texas as just this perfect situation that everybody is thrilled with what's going on down there, And that's what's being kind of told to our section. And I'd really like to know from his standpoint and also from the Southern standpoint, what is the overall view? Do they feel like the kids are getting better? Is this a advantageous situation? I'd really like to just know how things are actually going.
We have a very strong 10 and under group of kids here in San Antonio, and I haven't talked to a single parent. I haven't talked to a single coach who comes up to me and says, "You know what, Lawrence, you are wrong. This is the greatest thing in the world. I don't have any complaints whatsoever." Hasn't happened. Hasn't even come close to happening. Basically, generally, the parents think that the required tournaments, the number of tournaments, is too much. They think the travel for playing four game sets is too much, and they're frustrated. They want to get out of Green Ball. The only reason maybe not everyone, but I would say a large majority, the only reason they're playing Green Ball tournaments is to get out of it. Mm-hmm. So that's my perception, and maybe Trey has a different one, but that's the feedback I've been getting from people on the ground at the tournaments playing both green ball 10 and under tennis and yellow ball 10 and under tennis.
Lawrence, would you say the numbers have gone up or not based upon this?
In regards to the number of players playing 10 and under tennis?
Playing 10 and under tournaments.
I'll be honest. I've looked at it some. I think that in some spots, okay, like Dallas has, they've got some people in Dallas that are really pushing it. Their numbers are up. Austin, they've got some people that are pushing it. Their numbers are up. San Antonio. Go ahead.
Well, I got that comment. I wrote an email to the USTA and got a comment back that, that look at the numbers, they're going up. My argument to that is, but look at the 12s, it's going down. Typically, those kids would have already gone through and moved up to 12 so they could move on. They cannot. They're stuck. Therefore, of course, your participation is going to go up. That's a little deceiving. So I don't think you can honestly say because of this, because it's mandated, it is going to go up. There's no choice.
Right.
I think that's crucial. That's when they tell you that those numbers are going up, that's a little bit false information, meaning that it's not the whole truth. The truth is they're stuck. They can't move up. So, therefore, all you've done is taken the kids that would have moved up to 12s. My question is, has the 12s gone down? Absolutely. The draws are smaller. So you haven't really added that many more kids. You really just split them between three groups now.
Right. And what you'll find is, because this is the first year where 10 and under could not be grandfathered into the green ball division, okay? Mm-hmm. So now all the 10 and under kids are starting an orange ball. They have to play those 10 or 4 tournaments to get the green ball. So the numbers are going to continue. I think the numbers are going to continually contract in the 12s because they're going to have such a long road in 10 and under to get to 12s. And I know. Again, it depends on the city. Houston really hasn't taken off. They're not really buying into it. San Antonio is really not buying into it. The only cities I can see in Texas are Austin and Dallas that really, really have some legitimate numbers in 10 and unders right now.
What does that do to your outlying cities that are involved with the Orange Ball? Is that shown tournaments that don't go, that don't fill, that they don't have the events? In other words, if you have a 12 and under tournament in an outlying city, and we're seeing this in the Midwest, are you all of a sudden having tournaments not going because there's no kids to fill them?
You almost have to travel to the big cities in Texas because we tried one last year that was in Fort Stockton with like a week left and allowing me time to switch to another tournament. There were only three kids in there. So one of two things are going to happen. They're going to have it so small they do a round robin, which is fine. But that means someone is probably going to get through that's not as deserving as when you go to a big city, all of a sudden you've got all these kids in there because that's the only place they can play. And so they'll either cancel that one, or you're going to get someone that's out there that probably isn't near the quality of someone in the city. And I know that's going to happen no matter what. But last year they didn't even make the draw in Fort Stockton. It's coming up again this month, so I don't know what. I'd be curious to see.
I've got a good one for you. What Texas is going to do is they're going to combine genders to make draws. Now, someone
That'll
can call in from Texas and tell me. Someone can call in from Texas and tell me I'm wrong, but I read that probably about a week ago. We're going to combine boys and girls tens to make these draws.
Wow.
So,
I just feel wrong, but. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I was at a tournament in Lisa's neck of the woods in South Carolina that actually ended up getting rained out, sadly. But I was having a conversation with a mom and a dad, two separate families. The mom's son is 9 years old. He was playing 12s in this tournament, which was a southern level tournament, so that he could play yellow ball. But when he plays a local Georgia tournament, he plays in the 14s because that's the youngest age group that plays yellow ball tennis in Georgia. So it's a 9-year-old boy, and I met the child. He is not a big 9-year-old, and he is forced to play 14s if he wants to play yellow ball tennis near home, which I thought was really interesting. Now, the dad that was speaking with us is a former Clemson player, you know, top D1 school, grew up coming all through the juniors. His children, he has 3 children playing in 10 and unders. They've only been involved for about a year, and he was ready to throw in the towel. He was so confused and said, you know, I grew up in this sport, and I don't have the first clue what to do with my kids. This is the most confusing system I've ever seen. So I thought that was really interesting. And the dad lived locally in South Carolina. So I've said this a million times, my kid's 16, we missed all of this. And so I'm not familiar with it from a first-hand point of view, but I sure do get a lot of phone calls and emails about it. And you know, I'm realizing that there is a lot of controversy, and I'm not sure what the right answer is. And again, Lisa, I call on you to maybe share what you're hearing in terms of what South Carolina may be going to do moving forward. Have you heard anything to that effect?
Well, no. Short answer, no. I have not heard anything. I can give you a little bit of experience, just like I say, I get on the, you know, kind of where the funnel is the largest, where the largest number of players coming in as beginners and just getting into this program, never having any experience with the program, where it used to be just all yellow balls, this is all they know. And even so, with students who this is all they know, what I've noticed is the green ball portion of their career looks to me like this is going to be a very brief part of the learning curve. The red ball and orange ball, you know, just the size of the child and their coordination is developing, so forth and so on. It just makes it easier for them. But when it's a green ball, it's not much of a leap to get to yellow. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you just take them out on the big court and they've got these balls and they're faster. And the next thing you know, it's like, you know, at least in the coach's mind, me, I'm like, wow, this kid can play yellow ball. I mean, it's just not that big of a leap like it is from orange to green or red to orange. So I can see where, you know, the first thing that comes to a parent or a player's mind is, gosh, well, why do I need to be, you know, why green? Why am I using this green when there's not that much difference, you know, to go on up and play the yellow? So that, as an instructor, is kind of a tricky thing. Well, yeah, you know, everybody's moving to the green ball, but really, how long are we going to be here? Because this is pretty much the same thing. And it's very, that's a good question. I mean, a lot of them, yep, you know what, you're right, you're ready. But then
there's not a competition.
Exactly. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I was just going to say that this is all well and good during instruction, because I can pull out whatever ball I think is correct for the child to be using. until you get to tournament competition. And then it's like, well, you know, if you're doing a tournament, we're going to have to work on this ball. You want to prepare them for whatever they're competing on. But on the other hand, see that they're able to handle other levels. So it's definitely, I guess it's kind of up in the air right now. I don't mean to make a pun, but it just does seem like there's a concrete answer for the green and yellow transition right now.
I look at going into to the balls and so forth, though, they're really all skill-based. I use every single one of those balls, including a foam ball, with students that I don't feel are prepared with a certain skill. As they get better, you move them to the quicker ball, but the whole goal is to get them to a regular ball to succeed at full-court tennis on a regular court and so forth. So, it's just part of the process, and I feel as a coach, you can, that's your job to get them in the appropriate level and develop the skill. To me, the tournaments are allow them to have the access to move up. So, for example, one of my issues was when my son played, we played one to get grandfathered in the year before, so we played the dot ball. From there, I said, you know what, he's not ready for full ball. Let's wait. So I waited December, January, February, March. We played our first one in April. He won that one. And had some good matches. Could have easily lost. We won the next one. Now we won two. He wins the next one. He wins three in a row. And personally, as a coach and as a dad, I'm like, he's ready for the next level now. He's ready to go in the next one. It's time. Well, you can't now. We can't even go test to see are we really ready or do we need to continue working. There's no option. You're stuck, period. So how do you know with their system whether you can go up and have success or not? I think that the mandate is where I have the problem. It's that you're saying you know more than a coach or a parent about what's going on with that individual. And that's where I have the big issue. I've got certain kids, and it's the best thing because to get them in where they can rally and do the things skill-wise at a lower, slower level, it's awesome, and they love it. But when you have a more advanced player, you've got to find a way to progress them through the system a little quicker when they're ready. And I think four tournaments isn't a fair guideline. They don't use four tournament wins in any of the rest from 12s, 14s, 16s, or 18s. So why would you make it – they don't even use two in the other ones you have to win. So why would you make it four times more to move them out? And I've asked them, how did you come up with four? Where was the rationality of getting four that you – why didn't you use three? Why didn't you use two? Where did you get four? And I couldn't get a clear answer on that for any of their divisions other than, in my opinion, just there was probably not very many that were going to make it and it would keep them in the system.
Interesting. All right, guys, we've got another caller on the line. Let me bring them on from area code 210 again, area code 210913. Are you there? Hello? Okay, well,
that's
I don't
me.
Know.
That's me.
Oh, that's Lisa. You? Okay, you went off and
yeah.
came back on. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
All right, well, okay, welcome back. Okay, so, I mean, you bring up an interesting point, Trey, and that is, where is the research to support the mandate? And that's a question that I think several people have asked. I'm not sure any of us have received a satisfactory answer yet, and I'm wondering if any of you on this call have read research to support the age requirement for moving on versus a developmental requirement for moving on.
Yeah, and the other question going back to this is that I've asked them also to go back and look. So for Texas, we have Supers, which is your top kids, Champs, and then Zat. Zat's the intro to USTA tennis. I've asked them to go back and look at the last few years and look at the 12 and unders, find out what age did they play their first Zat in 12s for all those kids, what age did they qualify for Champs, what age did they qualify for Supers. And I'm telling you, the top kids were in there by 10 years old. They can't even play at 10 in these. And so it goes back to where is the research, where is the information saying that that's why we chose 11? I've asked that question. And that's why I felt so strongly that, you know, if you can get this information, I think you're going to find that most of these kids were already in Champs by 10. A lot of them were in Supers by 10
mm-hmm.
or borderline. And so I don't know.
But they're
they
not
wouldn't.
Allowed. They're not allowed to move on, is what you're saying in Texas.
Not
even
until
they're
11.
Right.
Not until. So if you started in Zats at 11, okay, let's just use, okay, now the Zats are really much weaker now. The 10s is stronger because all these kids are stuck in there. So most of the kids are moving through that qualify within two Zat tournaments now to three. it's much quicker because it's a lower level. So let's just say that's 3 months. You're 11 years old in 3 months now. And then it's going to probably take you 6 months to 9 months in champs. So now you're looking at almost 12. You're going to have 1 year in 12 to hopefully get high enough your ranking that you won't get bumped down when you go to 14s. It's not enough time. And if the parents understand how to get the kids at that level, or let's just say it's your third child, you've got two other highly ranked 14-year-old and a 16-year-old, you know how to work to get the kids in and get them in the right place when they need to be successful. And the way they've got it set up, I mean, you'd literally have to start the kid at 7 years old to get through the system to do this if it takes 20 months. Yeah, I mean, that's absurd. And the travel at that age, and you're putting that much, now you're having them compete and do things at a more accelerated rate than you would have if you had the old system.
But that would be my question. Is this running kids out of the sport because of it?
There are ones that aren't playing USTA. I know that for a fact.
That are not playing USTA? Is that what you said?
That are not, because they can't play in the appropriate division for them. They're going to be in an orange ball, which is an absolute it's a joke when they're already playing full court. We actually have a nice system here in town, which is called the Grand Prix system. That is full court for 10 and unders, and it's regular ball. It is not USTA sanctioned. So those kids are playing that system and getting lots of good competition, and there are plenty of kids that I guarantee you would qualify in 12s and already be in 12 champs. I guarantee you probably half of the 10s would. I've seen now a couple of tournaments, and I'm seeing when these boys are coming out, they're beating the seeds 1 and 2, 2 and 2. I mean, it's not even close. And the skill's not close. That's what I keep going back to. The kids are bigger, but they're not skilled. The skilled players are all in the 10 and unders because the parents, either if they're second, third, fourth child, they get it, or they understand, you know, we start them early, we develop the skills so they can get up there.
Interesting. I want to point out to my listeners, too, that there is a page at parentingaces.com devoted to 10 and under alternative tournaments. These are 10 and under events that use full court yellow ball, and we've listed them along with registration information. Most of them are not sanctioned for the 10 and under since they do use the yellow ball in a full court, but it is at least an opportunity for the younger kids to compete when they are developmentally ready to do so. I do have another caller on the line. I want to just bring them on. Area code 940613, are you there?
Yes, I am. Lisa, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Who's on the line with us?
This is Joe Worster in Wichita Falls, and we've dealt through some social media before, and I've actually talked with Lawrence. I've got a 9-year-old who is currently playing green ball in Texas, and, you know, this is like a broken record. Every parent that I've talked to, you know, in Texas that's doing what we do, in fact, my daughter will probably be the only girl in orange ball that ever got 11 credits because of the way that the junior team tennis credit fell. She ended up getting 11 before they would let her go up to green ball. And so it's a crazy process, and Texas section just isn't listening. You know, I mean, they don't even feign to listen. And so that's my question to the group is, what's the solution? Because I think it's exactly right. We've got kids that need to be in a certain division to be competitive and to potentially be competitive nationally from Texas section that, you know, need, if they get that extra year and a half in 12s, that's going to be good for them, and it's going to carry over because then they're not going to have to go back down and requalify when they get to 14s and other things. So it's just going to build on itself. And we're not going to be able to do that. So, you know, I guess I'd throw that out to the group. What are we going to do, and is there anything we can do?
Go ahead, Lauren. One thing that is happening are, you know, private entities are kind of carving out their own little niche in this. Trey mentioned the Grand Prix tournaments in San Antonio. I just can't say enough great things about it right now for 10 and unders. You know, playing 10 under tennis the way it should be. You know, full three sets, yellow balls, full size courts, and it's growing. You know, there's 10 under playing 12s, 14s, even some 16s. You know, a lot of people may have some differences. You know, a kid playing up that high, but tennis is just a great example of how the free enterprise system works. If you've overreached, you're really going to find out about it in a hurry, and then the parents and the coaches can regroup, and set their own plan up. And that's the way it should work. You know, I have kids that are 9 or 10 that play full court, yellow ball tennis, Grand Prix tennis. They win the tournaments consistently. I'm not really happy with the way they win the tournaments, and I would love to have that kid go back and play some green ball tournaments just so they get a little more topspin, hit out on the ball a little more. But we can't do that because she has to play orange ball tournaments. So, I mean, and the problem with this whole mandate is they're mixing an outreach program, trying to get a lot of tennis involved in the sport, which is fine. I understand the low compression balls, the rackets, the nets. We do it ourselves in elementary schools. We've got 500 to 1,000 kids every semester doing it, and that's what we use. But you can't combine an outreach program and then shove or try to put in the higher-level kids that want to excel and ignore that. And that's what's going on. And Lisa mentioned that there's a small percentage of kids that would fall into yellow ball, 10 and under tennis. I don't know what the small percentage is, but it's not the 1 or 2% that they want to sit, that the USTA wants to throw out there and say. I would say it's at least 10 to 20%, at least.
I would say even more in Texas.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is not a short amount of time to be in this green ball, orange ball stuff. It is a long time. A year of 10 and under tennis, it is unbelievable how fast a 10 and under kid can progress in 12 months.
Yes.
I mean, would you agree with me, Trey?
Absolutely, and I've seen the progression happen quicker as he's gotten up. Now he's in champs, and I just see that learning curve just flying. And this is when you can grasp them and get them to spend the time and get them to grow this quickly. You know, as they get older, it's just tougher.
Yeah, I mean, it's like learning a foreign language. You know.
Yeah.
When you're 7 years old, it's a lot easier.
Lawrence, one of the things you point out, though, is, you know, I live in a relatively geographically isolated area. And so, you know, we go to the Metroplex and, you know, we go to Abilene and we'll go to Waco and other places. We even travel to Austin. In fact, because we had a conflict with the ZAT in February, we drove from Wichita Falls to McAllen in order to get that credit because we didn't want to lose a month. And, you know, that's a 10-hour drive. I can drive to Colorado Springs faster. And so it's frustrating because there's good opportunities potentially in larger metropolitan areas, but they're just completely ignoring those of us who don't live in those areas. And that's also part of my frustration is that, you know, I guess we really don't care. And luckily, you know, we can play in Oklahoma. We can do other things outside of the section. But, you know, it's frustrating because Texas is basically saying, sorry, yeah, you might be in this 1 to whatever 20% of kids that want to be at a certain level, and we don't care about you. But they're the first kids they're going to put on their website when they do well doing other things. So they kind of want both ways is the way I see it.
But is it really
the first kids at the training?
But that's something I think you guys are missing. I don't believe it's Texas. I don't believe it's Florida. It's the USTA national. This is a national plan, folks, because we're seeing this pressure now coming from in the Midwest. This is we're being told how wonderful Texas is, and we need to be just like Texas. So, and that's what's being spun to all of our members of our junior competition committee here, as we're starting to speak up against it, and we're almost being told it's a foregone conclusion. So there's pressure being applied from a national level. So I don't know if it's just strictly Texas, but this is part of an overall plan, I think, that was introduced several years ago, and it's being systematically imprinted upon all the sections.
Well, what's interesting about that is within your – I'll be honest, until Lawrence and I started talking one day, I was told basically I was the only one complaining about the system. You know, there are just very few. But as you start talking to other parents, and again – you know, you're in a fine line. They're even the people that work with the USTA, there are some that don't like it. Now, they won't tell you that on the record, but they're, you know, they absolutely agree there's some things that need to be changed. And they're just, it's really difficult because I agree. I'm sure it's coming from the national. And, we aren't the only ones that aren't happy with it. As you start talking, you find out very few people are liking the system and think it's the only, if any, system. So,
I'm going to interrupt. Let me interrupt you one second. I mean, one of the things I keep hearing is, you know, once people find out that I write a blog and host a radio show, they like to share their experiences with me. But the people who are pro yellow ball, are pro red, orange, green ball, excuse me, those who are in favor of the red, orange, green are the ones whose kids are just entering the sport and
correct,
who are true beginners. And I think that, you know, once their children start to enter the world of competitive tennis, they quickly realize that it's a limitation on their child, not an opportunity for growth. It's an opportunity to learn the game. It's an opportunity to learn strategy at the beginning level, even as an adult. I mean, I know coaches here in Atlanta who use the foam balls with adult beginners and,
yeah,
you know, have said it's a great tool to get people used to the way the ball moves and making contact and all of that. So I don't think any of us would disagree with the statement that it's a great teaching tool at the beginner level. But I think where you know, we start to diverge is when it becomes the one and only way to be in the system of competition that we have in this country, which is right now pretty much all run through USTA. Now, again, we have things like the Grand Prix Series that Lawrence has referred to. And in the Atlanta area, J.P. Weber has started some alternative events. And, you know, there are events popping up. We have the Little Mo system of tournaments that still use yellow ball full court. Though, now somebody told me they are using an orange ball at some level. Is that right? Have any of y'all heard that with Little Mo?
I think there's Big Mo and Little Mo is now what they're called, is what I understand.
Yeah, Mini Mo is what I think it was referred to. It's Little Mo and Mini Mo.
Okay.
And Mini Mo uses the orange ball?
Yeah, they'll do the orange green.
Got it. But the point is that there are alternatives out there, and for those who are truly interested in having their children develop their game at a competitive level, you may have to put aside ranking, which as Trey alluded to, makes the transition into 12s and 14s that much trickier because you're coming into these older age groups with zero ranking points and having to basically start from scratch. And that's where it's a shame. Okay, guys, I've got another caller on the line. Area code 530272, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Who's on the line with us?
My name is Vic Borgono.
Hi,
Vic.
I was
just curious, you know. Thank you. Good conversations. I was just curious. It sounds like there's a lot of emphasis on the competition. And so I was just curious, and if one thinks back on the Williams sisters and the fact that their father tended to avoid the competition early on, it makes one wonder if there's not a lot more skills that could be developed using the green ball. So my question is, what do you qualify or what do you think that the green ball offers, and where are the limitations in the skills that can be taught with the green ball?
Lisa, let me jump on that.
Go ahead.
All right. I coach a large number of varying levels and ages in Michigan, and kids that have gone up all the way up to the pros. I will tell you that each one of those balls has a huge upside to it, but each ball also has a downside to it if they're left in too long. For instance, the green dot ball is phenomenal in helping to develop strokes, getting the player to move up to the ball and move into the shot. However, the kids quickly figure out that I can pound this ball back and forth 400 times and get no effect. So what starts to happen is the kids' strokes begin to actually break down. What you've developed actually degrades, and they start into kind of hacking or kind of drop-shotting incessantly, which isn't really, you know, developing sub-touch. That's phenomenal. But if they stay into the balls too long, the negative characteristics of the ball actually can take off. So you don't actually it's a phenomenal progression to go through, but not something a be-all, end-all. And I think we talked about it before that that's based upon skill and development, not based on age. I think most people would agree that the balls are phenomenal, but it's based on their development, not some magical age.
But does the green ball court and green balls, they really are, if you look at the time between hits, you really do have more time for the green ball than you do the red and orange balls. And that makes me wonder if there aren't other skills that could be taught. For instance, I see very few juniors that have the split step properly timed. There's a lot of people that talk about it, but very few understand it and very few teach it properly. So just the split step itself would be a wonderful thing. And they're at the right age because that's when agility and movement are so critical. And so here's an opportunity that, you know, you could add, and I'm not saying that's the only one you could add, but I think there's a lot more skill levels that could be added in the green ball, and maybe not so much emphasis on the competition, because I think the USTA has a tough problem to solve. And it's going to need a lot of cooperation by a lot of people to kind of help that, you know, be promoted. But I'm thinking you're giving up on maybe the emphasis that should be put on the skills as compared to the competition.
If you notice, I didn't talk about tournaments or competition at all. I was purely talking about development. So I agree with you. I totally agree with what you're saying. I think the biggest, most discouraging thing that really is out there is the lack of research in this area, that we're going to all these mandates with unknowns. Where are the kind of focus groups? Where are the comparisons between a kid being developed one way versus another? What about, it seems to me that reaction time is a huge long-term issue. And I know that there are companies that have even developed these little programs, you know, to increase reaction time. So I'm not saying that the USTA is entirely right or wrong. I just want to see, okay, why are we picking these numbers out of the air? I can tell you from my coaching that I see validity in it, but not keeping somebody beyond the point that they're bored. And, you know, to that extent, we've been told about what goes on in Europe and what goes on in other places. I'm actually leaving next week to visit the training camp in Spartak in Russia, and I'm going to stop off in Paris to see what's going on there for my own eyes, because I'm not sure we're getting the full story.
My only question or comment on this would be that you're typically, when you go play a tournament, you're not out there to learn new skills. You may be there to practice them, but the teaching and the learning should be coming from the foundation of the coach or the parent, whoever. That's where you're supposed to learn these. You practice them out there, and yes, it may give them more time, but you can't ask a system to develop players. The system may help develop players. It may assist, but the system can't develop them. Without good coaching and knowledge.
And I think maybe that's the problem with the USTA right now. That's what they're trying to do. They've been trying to do.
Right, and that's not their job, in my opinion. I want a fair playing ground. I want the rules that are out there and so forth, but I want the opportunity to progress whenever the student is ready to progress, not when they think the system says they're ready. And if the system doesn't have bases, which is what you're saying, where's the background going, which is my question, why did you come up with four? Did you find after four the kids were an all-star? Or did you, you know, why did you pick four? And that's where I couldn't get an answer that frustrated me, because if you can give me a logical answer, and I can at least agree or disagree, but at least you've got some premises behind it. It wasn't just a number pulled out, which is the way I feel this one was.
Guys, we have another caller on the line, area code 225-810. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Did you have a question?
Yeah, hey, Lisa, this is Trace Vincent from Baton Rouge.
Hey, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I wanted to
get in on this a little bit. I have a pretty big 10-under program here in Baton Rouge, and I wanted to kind of – and I have a daughter that just turned 11. We're in the southern section, and she finished top 10 in the south in orange and yellow. But we were kind of forced to play it also. My daughter's very small. in stature, and I think it did hurt. It has hurt her moving up to the 12s. And the reason I say that, you know, she could have competed in the yellow ball 10s. I think it would have been an easier progression moving up. So, I, in my opinion, I saw almost a 3 to 4 month to for her to develop to get there. Because what happened, she started dominating that age division, so I had to pull her out and play her up against some girls that, you know, almost already turned 13, going to Bullfrogs or wherever we're going. And basically, you know, if she could have been playing in other 10-year-olds and kind of went in that age division that wasn't overpowering her quite as much all the time, I think it would have helped her in the long run. And I had a number of kids that I've seen, parents want their kids to win, and so they want to leave them in this orange ball group. And what's happening, they're moving up now to the 12s, and they haven't developed skills. I'm agreeing with most of these guys. Two things I see happening. One, the court is so much narrow in width, the kids aren't learning how to use angles. Second thing that's happening is it is hurting footwork because the ball moves so slow, and or the kids aren't having to track down balls or split like they're talking about in cover court width and understand how to get back in points. They can almost stand in the middle of the court and do nothing and win. And the whole point was, you know, the ball wasn't supposed to bounce high, wasn't supposed to move as fast, and you're supposed to be developing strokes. But what we're seeing here in Louisiana, and I'm seeing around the South, is it's going the other way. Kids are getting away with pushing more. They're just kind of tapping it over. So you get a kid that's trying to develop and, you know, create points and do things, come to the net, and you can't put the ball away for one because it moves so slow. And so what happens, these other kids that are just deflecting and winning all of a sudden move up, and now they're starting to get crushed because their coach has never kind of held them accountable to get better. And to me, the big thing is now they're not enjoying the 12. So I'm seeing a number of things with it too. So and I agree with it as a teaching tool, beginning tool, all of it. But to some degree, like I said, I don't think a kid, you know, even here in the South, it should be mandated that we have to use the orange ball for the 10s.
Lisa?
That's
I'm kind of like the other guy's opinions.
Lisa?
Yes.
Oh, I had a question. Have other coaches noticed, like this previous guy that just mentioned, the fact that the green ball is indeed a slower rally speed? In other words, if you were to count the time between hits with green ball players, that they're almost 0.3 seconds longer than the orange balls, and also about 0.3 seconds longer than the red balls. The red ball players and the orange ball players have to move more quickly on the court than the green ball players. And that's just something we've discovered here the last week or so. And I haven't heard much conversation about that.
Guys, y'all want to jump in?
Well, I'm no expert, and I'm certainly just a parent that's seen a ton of orange ball tennis tournaments. And I can tell you that is the most difficult transition, is that the kids, as was mentioned before, they just don't move their feet when they're in orange ball because they don't have to. So if you've got a kid that's pretty quick, they're just gonna stand there and they're gonna be able to get those balls back. And then when they move to a full court, it's a different deal. And so that's just anecdotal. Certainly, you know, I guess everything that the USTA has certainly done seems to be anecdotal. But at least from my perspective, it's anecdotal just watching kids play.
Interesting.
I find his assertion kind of very interesting, and I wouldn't discount it now that I'm thinking about it. But it goes to the whole question of where's the research? If
right.
This is where we're going, where's the research? Why, you know, is this just because? I mean, he brings up a very good point.
One of the things
can jump in, I'm gonna get off the line real quick, but we're fixing to do it. I have two other girls here that are with me right now in Baton Rouge. Both of them just turned 9, and both of them have gotten to topping their age division in the South and the 10s. And so basically what we're doing now is we have basically, and Lisa knows my friend helping me, Tony, one of them is his student, and we have both just kind of agreed this weekend that we're going to take them off the orange and yellow, and we're going to play them as much in regular practice on the yellow, because, again, they are much more highly skilled. And then what we're going to see, we're going to try to track. We're going to take a small group, almost like what I saw. I don't know who wrote that for you, Lisa. Maybe it was Craig Signorelli or whatever his name was.
Uh-huh.
We got enough kids that are good enough. We're fixing to do that over the next year and a half because I was a fan of it and I am a fan of it, like I said, as a teaching tool to get my kids rallying. I have a big, like I said, beginner program also. But what I'm seeing, like I said, I'm seeing downsides more than I'm seeing upsides to the transition is what I'm seeing. And that could just be me. And I also see a major setback in the feel of the ball. The orange-yellow ball is so light. And when they start trying to move to the yellow ball, to me, it's supposed to help with spin and stuff, but the ball is so much lighter, you can't feel the ball to do things with it. So that's just kind of been our opinion of it. But I just kind of wanted to call it.
Craig, if we could hook up and maybe through Lisa, I'd love to be where we share some information back and forth. We'd like to do the same thing up here in Michigan and maybe share some results back and forth in terms of tracking kids.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Lisa, what I'll do is I'll shoot you my email or my name and number.
Yep.
And stuff, and then you can shoot me his.
Yep.
Yeah,
I will email the two of you guys together. I'll
okay.
be
thank you.
Maker.
Follow up. This is Vic, and I just wanted to follow up on one of the comments made by, I think, someone down in Texas, is it?
Yeah.
Concerning the observation that may, in fact, he's seeing this slower ball for the green ball. And a question I had is, would it be a good experiment to just go ahead and say, let's play the green ball kid on the orange ball court? That would speed it up. Take the green ball, use those on an orange ball court, and just see what the effect might be, because I think they're going to have to move more quickly because it's shorter.
I can tell you what the effect's going to be. The balls are going to go flying out because the net's too high on the orange ball court. You can't get it up and down quick enough.
Interesting.
The nets are not proportionate to the court size on the orange ball court. So good luck getting that ball in.
Okay. That's an interesting shot, yeah.
Interesting. All right, we have another caller, you guys. Busy show today. Area code 937-838. Are you there? Area code 937-838. You on the line? Okay. Well, maybe they're just listening. All right. So, you guys, this has been very eye-opening today. And, again, given the fact that I do not have any direct experience with red, orange, green, I'm learning a lot from y'all and thanking my lucky stars that my child was born when he was born. So I didn't have to deal with this. I feel for the parents and the coaches out there, honestly. We are down to our last minute and a half or so on the air. So I wanted to give each of you guys a chance to maybe summarize your feelings or give an action step that you'd like to see happen as we move forward with this discussion. So, Lisa, are you still on the line?
Yes,
still okay.
Here. I would like to say that I agree with a previous guest who mentioned the different options that are starting to sprout up because of this issue. I think that's wonderful. The more options we have, the better off we'll all be. And I'd also like to agree with a previous comment that the whole purpose of these different colored balls and different types of balls is progress. It's to move these students, these players up to yellow when appropriate. It's not to be the best orange ball player in the country, right? We want to get to yellow and get playing on full court regular tennis and get them there as quickly as possible.
That's a great point. And, Trey, do you have any final words you'd like to share?
I do. I think the bottom line is I think the system is wonderful for beginners. I think it's great. I think everybody agrees upon that. Advanced, I think you're really hurting those players. The intermediate's the one I'm not sure about, and that's a lot of times where you're getting the push to the top, and I think that could be the most important group that without better info and more time, unfortunately, I, I don't know how you would know that, but I tend to fall to the side that I don't think it's helping them, unfortunately. I think it's getting them stuck. I think it's too long, and they've got to find a way to get the better kids through the system quicker, the more advanced kids that are skilled. And unfortunately, no system is going to cure anything. So whatever they do, there's always going to be exceptions to the rule. The kid doesn't have the skills, and there's going to be a kid the other way. So I don't know what the right answer is. I think they've got to communicate more and be receptive to listening to the parents and the coaches out here, which I don't feel like has been happening. I feel like we've been getting shunned. So that would be my most important comment, is I want more info from the USTA, and I want them to listen to us about the experience. I'm not criticizing. I'm trying to give them information to help, and I just wish they would listen to us.
Great point. And, Lawrence, are you still on?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. Last thoughts?
Just real quick, I think one of the callers from Louisiana made a very, very big point, is that I think a lot of this stuff can be solved if they come up with a 10 and under transition division using yellow balls. That way, the more elite players or the upper level players will get into yellow ball quicker, and the intermediate players, or maybe someone that's not as big, we'll have some place to go after they get through green, orange ball, but it needs to happen quicker. And you know, we talked to USTA Texas about this, and that was one of our big suggestions, is that there has to be, you know, a 10 and under transition ball alternative to red, green, orange, and then 12 and under yellow. So I would leave it at that.
As well as, I think, when you do that 10 and under regular ball, they should do the scoring format so you get the kids used to the other scoring as well. I agree.
Yeah, we didn't
you
even
mean
go
whole
into that.
Six game sets. Yeah. That's a whole other show. we'll do that one next time. Thank you guys so much for coming on today. Lisa Johnston, Lawrence Roddick, Trey Foster, Tom Walker for joining us. It was a great conversation. I hope my listeners have learned something new, and I hope this has inspired you guys to get involved and try to get some changes going with this red, orange, green mandate so that our kids can continue to develop and we once again have American kids at the top of the food chain. That's what we all want, after all. Have a great week, everybody. Next week on our show is Athletes Audio, a new iPad, iPhone app for our kids to use, which is really cool. So I'm looking forward to that. Hope you all have a lovely Passover, those who are celebrating, a lovely Easter to those who are celebrating that, and I look forward to talking to you all again next Monday. Have a great week.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
Thank you.